This week in KMA Land, impressive severe storm strikes KMA Land. Heavy rainfall causes Shenandoah and Page County flooding. Lightning and other weather strikes twice in Mills County. Montgomery, Adams, and Cass counties feel severe storms power and heated discussions in Shenandoah, Page County, and Montgomery County meetings. I'm Mike Peterson. It was already an active year for severe storms in KMA Land, but the region once again found itself in the crosshairs for the biggest severe weather outbreak of 2026, and it arrived early Thursday morning. National Weather Service officials warned of the potential for rough weather 24 hours in advance by placing most of the region in the slight risk category for severe weather. Jesse Castillo is a meteorologist with the Weather Service's Valley, Nebraska office. On Wednesday, Castillo warned us the storms would bring heavy rainfall.
We are outlooked for a slight risk of excessive rainfall. Really, that encompasses areas from Lincoln to Omaha and along the I-80 corridor into the southeast. So essentially your listening area there. So people will definitely want to pay attention to the weather here.
Ann Castile told KMA News high humidity levels and an unsettled atmosphere made the perfect ingredients for a potent severe weather breakfast.
We're seeing increased southerly flow essentially helping pump in that increased moisture. So, you know, right now, just even looking at our dew point temperatures, they're really muggy, anywhere from the upper 60s to low 70s for dew point. So, again, we have a really, really humid air mass.
Sure enough, KMA Land residents received a rude awakening Thursday morning as tornadoes, severe storm, and flash flood warnings abounded in southeast Nebraska and southwest Iowa from that strong line of thunderstorms. Michaela Wood is a meteorologist with the Weather Service's Valley, Nebraska office. Wood tells KMA News activities began with storms near Grand Island, then the squall line slowly tracked east, touching off one warning after another, leaving a trail of destruction.
We had a lot of wind and tree damage. Some wind reports out of just south of Plattsmouth up to 80 miles an hour measured with a lot of tree damage. And then as it moved into southwest Iowa, there just kind of became a straight line wind machine. And we have lots of reports of straight line wind. Even, I believe it was Essex, Iowa. Yeah, that.
Wood says tree, home, and building damage reports were numerous across the region, as well as reports of heavy rainfall.
We also got a lot of rain in the area. Some reports close to the 4 to 5 inch range, so there were some flash flood warnings out there as well. Hail up to just over 3 inches actually fell in southwest Iowa. So all severe weather hazards this morning.
Now, though numerous tornado warnings were issued, only 2 confirmed touchdowns were reported. Wood says Weather Service officials were investigating the damage as well as determining whether Thursday's storm's outbreak could be classified as a derecho. Well, Shenandoah was among those communities drenched by heavy rainfall early Thursday morning. That's what it sounded like outside the KMA studios from the massive squall line of severe storms entering Shenandoah at around 5:30 a.m. Various reports indicate 2 to 3 inches of rain fell on the community in a short period of time, causing heavy street flooding throughout the city. Shenandoah City Administrator A.J. Lyman tells KMA News too much rain fell too fast for the community's sewer system to handle.
Our storm sewer systems aren't designed to contain that much water that quickly, so we obviously had some flash flooding. Luckily, it seems to have dissipated for the most part off of the streets. Obviously, there's some puddles here and there, but I know that with that hard rain and the wind, I thought I saw a report of 100-mile-an-hour straight-line winds maybe up in Imogene. So I know we would have had some pretty strong winds down this way, too.
In addition to street flooding, Lyman says water collected in basements of city facilities and residences.
I know we have a variety of city buildings that have some water in the basement, like I'm sure quite a few homes around town do. You know, I heard some reports from random spots in town that they've never had water in their basement. Now they have a foot of water in their basement for some reason. So unfortunate that it happened. I think, you know, just that water coming down as hard as it was, as quick as it was, it just kind of overwhelmed everybody's ability to cope with that.
While some tree limbs were reported down, Lyman says tree damage wasn't as significant as that from previous storms, including the December 2021 derecho. Other portions of Page County felt the power of the storm's onslaught. Page County Emergency Management Coordinator Jill Harvey was out surveying the damage following the storms. Harvey told KMA News the powerful squall line left street flooding in Essex and other cities in its wake. Harvey warned motorists to avoid flooded streets.
If you see water across the street in town or across roads, please do not cross it. We don't know what the roads look like underneath of that. That's been the main issue right now, is flooding and power lines down that we're finding out. We did have some damage to some homes along out on 110th Street that we're still assessing. No injuries that I've heard.
A siren sounded in Shenandoah shortly after 5:50 a.m. when the storm's edge rolled through the community. Sirens were also activated in Essex, Coyne, College Springs, and Northboro. Though tornado warnings were in effect for the county at the time, Harvey says the sirens sounded in the county's southern section because of high winds and the early morning timing of the activity.
There were some reports of, 80, 90 mile an hour winds in places. So with the time of day and being dark and not being able to confirm that by sight, we went ahead and sounded those sirens based on the warnings from the weather service and watching radars and where that storm was coming through.
Those sirens remain silent in Clarinda. Clarinda School Superintendent Jeff Privia says the city still got a taste of storm activity. Privia gave this report on KMA's Morning Line program Thursday morning, shortly after the storms left the county.
We had street flooding. We've had some power out in some areas. We had some baseball and ping pong sized hail, some really gusty winds here in Clarinda. The street flooding really about 6 this morning was pretty heavy through Clarinda. And again, like you, we had some debris in the road from trees and stuff, but I don't think we had any trees down in the city of Clarinda.
Thursday's outbreak barked the second time within a week Mills County was victimized by severe weather. At its peak Thursday morning, according to MidAmerican Energy's outage map, over 3,500 customers, roughly 51% of customers in Mills County, were without power after that powerful squall line went through. In Mills County, multiple reports of wind gusts exceeded 70 miles per hour, including a 73 mile per hour gust near Tabor and an 80 mile per hour gust near Silver City. Mills County Emergency Management Director Travis Hitchcock told KMA News nearly every portion of the county was under a tornado warning at some point early Thursday morning, beginning at around 5:30 a.m. The severe storms also came as cleanup efforts continued from high winds that pummeled the county last Friday.
Similar to what we experienced, last Friday, a lot of reports of trees down, blocking roadways, impacting power lines. And then we're getting a lot of that, being reported in the Glenwood and then the unincorporated areas of Glenwood. Right now, I reached out to some of my point of contacts in the individual cities to get initial reports. Silver City, Mineola, and Henderson, had a couple limbs down here or there.
Reports also came in from a train spotter near Malvern reporting damage to a self-serve gas station with one-third of the roof of a metal building removed by straight-line winds. Hitchcock says the damage assessment efforts shifted towards north of Tabor, where the National Weather Service indicated there was a radar-confirmed tornado.
I'm kind of working that line for Mills and Fremont County. I have my emergency management specialist, working south of Malvern in those secondary roadway systems to see if we can identify any damage in the unincorporated area. And then I'm working south on 59 of Emerson, and then we're going to work back to see if we can. But from what we're getting from the National Weather Service is that that would have been the area where they are seeing that greatest concern, right, of rotation.
Hitchcock says civil defense sirens were sounded in each impacted community as tornado warnings were issued. Like much of the region, Hitchcock says the storms also brought torrential rains with flash flood warnings earlier in the morning across the county.
I've got reports specifically in Malvern currently of a lot of the low-lying areas, having standing water in them. I've just been working, Silver City, Mineola, Henderson, and there is standing water in the ditches. I'm currently south on 59, and I've seen multiple areas that just has standing water in the roadside ditches. So yes, I think we had quite a bit of heavy rainfall associated with these storm systems as they move through.
Well, not to be outdone, Montgomery County was also in the path of the severe weather rampage. County Emergency Management Director Brian Hammond says damage reports were widespread, but the worst damage appeared to be concentrated in the southeast corner of the county.
Areas around Villisca and Nottoway, especially from damage that we've been able to see and have responded to so far, but it's still early on in the morning. We're out doing damage assessments, responding to calls as they come in. But the one thing we would ask that people stay away from the area and don't travel unless you absolutely need to. They are hindering cleanup efforts and responders responding to calls.
Henry Cash is a KMA Sky Watcher from Villisca. Cash told KMA News he observed extensive tree damage throughout the city after high winds pummeled the community.
And it looked like it took the tops out of a lot of trees. It uprooted some of them, too. I suppose it's because of that wet weather we had earlier, because some of the trees actually have come right out of the ground, even. But, yeah, we got a lot of damage. No electricity. A lot of wires yanked out of the sides of the houses and things like that. When the rain went through, it looked like a white wall of water when it went through.
Wind gusts of 73 miles per hour reported near Villisca. Reports also came into the National Weather Service of damaged grain bins near the U.S. Highway 34 and 71 interchange north of Villisca. Hammond says torrential rains also left some flooded roadways throughout the county in the early morning. Southeast Nebraska was also hammered by severe storms before southwest Iowa. Cass County emergency management officials were among those compiling damage reports. Cass County EMA Director Chad Corte tells KMA News storms began developing farther west in Nebraska and continued to intensify as they pushed east, setting off tornado warnings across the county, which began shortly after 5:15 a.m.
Started out with a tornado warning in the Eagle, Elmwood, Avoca area. So far, we haven't got any reports of any damage there. Then they pretty much warned the whole county for 80-mile-an-hour winds. And as they were doing that, then we came up with another tornado warning that was around the Weeping Water, Nahaka, Union, Lake Wakanda area.
Weather Service officials also upgraded the tornado warning to a radar-confirmed tornado with a twister believed to have touched down east of Weeping Water. Another hard-hit area was Adams County, where Corning officials provided a dump site for tree debris from Thursday morning storms. Damage reports coming into the National Weather Service indicated significant structural damage in and around Corning, including at least one building along Main Street in Corning, as well as trees down in a building roughly a mile northwest of town. Before Thursday's storm activity, storms of a different sort were brewing in KMA land, and the heat that dominated the area before Thursday seemed to infiltrate area meetings where hot topics were on the agenda. We start with Shenandoah, where plans for a proposed housing project received another lease on life, but not before contentious debate from council members. By a 3-2 vote Tuesday evening, the Shenandoah City Council approved a 90-day extension to Kendra and Michael Weston, developers of proposed housing units on the former Sack and Save property at 301 West Sheridan Avenue. Back in 2023, if you'll recall, the council sold the property to the Westons for $4,250. Council members then granted a one-year extension to the couple in April of last year. Since that time, Kendra told the council the project encountered many hurdles, including a setback in prospects for funding from the Charles E. Lakin Foundation Southwest Iowa Initiative.
Lakin Initiative will do amazing things for Southwest Iowa, but they needed more time, so their funding was put on pause, not just for our project, but for almost all of their projects. We decided that we didn't want to sit complacent. We needed to pivot. And in January, when we found out that we kind of needed to build a new plan, we kind of started searching around for who we might be a good fit with.
With a Lakin funding option available for the time being, Kendra says the Westons met with Matt Daniels, Director of Operations for Origin Homes of Des Moines, and Clint Sloss, Project Manager with Hubble Realty Group of West Des Moines, both experienced housing developers in Iowa. Kendra says their goal of finding a Southwest Iowa project line up with plans for the Sack and Save lot.
We'll still have duplexes on the north side of the block. The change that would be made is we are hoping to do an apartment building there instead of all duplexes. The reason for that is cost. To make the project feasible, we just need higher occupancy on that block.
After meeting with Debbie Durham, director of the Iowa Economic Development Authority, Kendris's application was made to establish the lot as a Grayfield site, making it eligible for funding for concrete and debris removal. Councilman Kim Swank motioned to deny the Westons the extension, A longtime project opponent, Swank told Kinder he was disappointed that they failed to provide progress reports to the council and that the couple was wasting the city's time.
I'm thinking maybe it's time you step aside and let somebody else try dribbling the ball, because you're not getting very much good out of it. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you haven't got anything done in the 4 years that you've done it but spin your heads.
Swank's motion was defeated by a 3-2 vote, with Swank and Councilman Jeff Capps voting in favor and Councilmembers John Eric Brantner, Matthew Reagan, and Richard Jones voting no. Jones' motion to grant the Westons the 90-day extension with the stipulation that they work with City Attorney Balon Sorensen on possible contract ownership and for Kindra and Origin Group officials to present a financial plan to the council following the 90-day period. Jones says he wants something more concrete from the Westons.
Blueprints, if you will, whatever. Something more where us as a council and citizens would say, okay, this looks like a good plan. Without it, it's just like, okay, well, we're going to just entrust you with everything after 3 years. That probably, I mean, that's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people.
Jones, Brantner, and Reagan voted in favor of the extension, while Swank and Capps voted against it. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Wednesday morning, Shenandoah Mayor Roger McQueen reiterated his support for granting the Westons more time.
I think the three council members that voted for this extension did the right thing. I still believe this project's going to happen, and I think that when Kendra came in last night and presented her latest updates on it, that they took heed in that, and I totally agree with the motion and the vote.
While saying he's disappointed the project hasn't come to fruition, Queen says he understands the hurdles the Westons faced in its development.
Originally, when they bought that, we thought we would see something by now, but I do understand completely the setbacks that they've had to deal with. Just looking at it from a city standpoint, what it took us to get a wastewater plant started. I mean, you know, it took a year and a half just to get land acquired. So, you know, I completely understand when things get delayed or get set back.
McQueen also expressed confidence in the Westons developing a new plan for the Sac and Save lot with help from outside agencies. Well, plans for a solar energy project in Page County were scrutinized Thursday morning. Officials with MidAmerican Energy updated the county's Board of Supervisors on plans for the Nottoway Valley Solar Project, a 50-megawatt solar farm on roughly 350 acres northeast of Clarinda. John Huff is outreach manager with MidAmerican. Huff says the company applied for a generating certificate from the Iowa Utilities Commission for the project. He says notices were sent out to surrounding landowners and the county attorney's office regarding the application.
If approved, the Iowa Utilities Commission would need to approve it. But if they do, then we would be able to advance the Nottoway Valley Solar Project using standards that they feel are appropriate for protecting the public while allowing for, you know, responsible construction and development of energy infrastructures.
Huff says the company plans a public meeting on the proposed project later this month, possibly in Clarinda. Supervisor Todd Maher expressed concerns that MidAmerican would circumvent the county's solar energy ordinance approved in December 2024, setting restrictions on such projects. Maher says the ordinance was established to protect residents, including non-participating landowners, from future projects.
You have a big group of people that just want to keep agriculture land. You know, I understand the energy things and goals that MidAmerican has on that, but I think that's the part of trying to marry that up with agriculture is really tough.
MidAmerican attorney Katie Alexander says the IUC has the authority to approve generating permits, but will take county input into consideration.
The commission will only do that with additional reasonable conditions and things like that. So I would encourage you to look at our application and some of the things that we've proposed to comply with. And then also, as I mentioned, the Utilities Commission has authority to obligate MidAmerican to comply with additional obligations.
Alexander says the county also has the right to participate in future Utilities Commission hearings. Gene Wagoner of Clarinda is among property owners living near the proposed solar project. Wagoner disputed MidAmerican's contention that the company was being good neighbors for those impacted by the development. Citing published information regarding the project, Wagoner questioned what happened if the IUC rejected the project's application.
In this booklet, it says there's going to be undue hardship if they don't get this thing passed, get the Iowa Commission. So is the hardship that you're not going to get the federal money? And if it's such a good project, it should go forward without the money and not have to be rushed to get through. That's what bothers us. It's because there's money dangling there. They're pushing and pushing instead of making sure everything's done right. And that's my concern.
Earlier, Wagoner accused the supervisors of changing the regular meeting's 4 p.m. starting time to 9 a.m. in order to squelch public comments of the project. Supervisors Chair Judy Clark replied the county announced the rescheduled meeting weeks in advance. Tension surfaced in Montgomery County's boardroom Tuesday morning over a proposed new addition to the county auditor's office. Discussion, often heated at times, took place at the County Board of Supervisors meeting over County Auditor Jill Ozuna's proposal for a part-time budget, finance, and human resources position for up to 30 hours per week. Ozuna cited issues with extreme overtime hours and difficulties for her and her staff to take time off because of responsibilities associated with budgets and elections, among others.
If we could increase a little bit for this position, it would help alleviate a lot of the responsibility that falls on my office that is statutorily required to be on your office. The budgeting, finance, and HR falls on the Board of Supervisors. But the auditor's office has taken the brunt of it.
Ozuna also cites state mandates as another issue her office deals with.
There's always new legislative things that pass that end up falling on unfunded mandates that fall on the auditor's office. Just House File 718 is a huge example. Extra mailings that we have to do. Mailings during budget. Extra mailings during election time. Probably come up with a big, long list of those things. There's a lot of things that need to be done in our office that we don't do because we don't have time to, because other things take precedent.
Ozuna adds the additional position would not only save the county money in overtime hours, but also reduce the cost of state auditing invoices. Citing a recent state auditor's exit report, which outlined numerous findings, Supervisor Mike Olson agreed the county has issues that must be addressed.
There's a lot of issues, and we need to get a hold of them. And if we don't get control of them as a board, we're going to end up on Facebook just like Madison County. That's not a threat. That's a guarantee. Because we have issues that are going out two, three years with the fourth coming. And that can't continue.
Supervisor Bryant Amos says, like her or not, Ozuna is the county's auditor. And her office needs budget information from other departments in order to do her job.
The auditor's office is, and correct me if I'm wrong, responsible for auditing all departments in the county. And then we have the state auditors come in and audit that. And if the auditor has not received on time or accurately information from those other offices, problem comes down on the auditor.
Yep.
And then the auditor asks for the corrections, and then she becomes the bad guy. This is all becoming a bunch of BS.
Supervisor Alex Burton expressed several concerns over the proposal. Burton questioned whether a qualified person could be found to fill a part-time position in Ozuna's office. He also questioned whether the additional job is the answer to what he called strained relationships in the courthouse. That prompted a heated exchange with Ozuna.
It's very clear that there are strained relationships within the courthouse. I'm talking enough. I'm not accusing you of anything.
You're accusing that.
There are strained relationships within the courthouse. Is that true? Yes or no?
It's the way it's always been. Yes. Okay. Always.
Easy enough. Then work towards a solution by building the relationships.
Supervisor's Chair Sharla Smith says she wants to see information on overtime expenses and a comparison of how the additional employee would save the county money. And more discussion is expected at future supervisors' meetings. One other thing, things got hot for a different reason in Shenandoah early Sunday morning. Shenandoah's fire department responded to the scene of a fire at 602 8th Avenue shortly after 3:15 a.m. Shenandoah Fire Chief Justin Marshall told KMA News flames were visible upon arrival. No one was hurt till the fire broke out. Essex and Farragut fire departments responded under mutual aid. All in all, a busy week, but that's all the time we have for this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News.